Broadcasting from the Co-Certified Studios in beautiful downtown Burbank, this is National Bugle Radio.
Hey gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio Financial Fun Filbert Friday. Except it's not necessarily Friday, and we're not necessarily talking about finance, but we do have Filbert here.
Yeah, I'm here. Here we are.
Here we are. And maybe this is going to be philosophical, or maybe it's going to be, I'd like to find something that begins with an F, but maybe, yeah, fun. It'll be fun. We're going to start off talking about black people. No, there's a recent study. There's a geneticist that I try to follow. His name is Svante Paavo. He was the person who developed the technology for extracting ancient DNA from bones. Bones as old as half a million years old from horses. I think well over half a million years old from horses, and certainly many tens of thousands of years for humans. He's famous for having sequenced the Neanderthal genome, and he is among the authors of a new study just published. Maybe it's older than I thought. It only came to my attention recently, but a study from the journal Nature, the bonobo genome compared with chimpanzee and human genomes. The interesting thing that is in it that caught my eye was looking at certain parts of the genome. Looking at, I guess, the variation and mutation rates in the X chromosomes, and women have two X chromosomes, men only have one X chromosome, and then the other chromosomes, the other, 22 pairs of chromosomes that aren't X or Y, and comparing the ratio of the mutation rates and whatnot. It's a little bit above my pay grade, I'll admit that, but gets a measure of the reproductive populations. So, for instance, if you have a reproductive population, if it seems that there's like more females reproducing than males, it means you've got basically more polygamy. You've got more promiscuity among the females, or is it among the males? Well, it's probably among both. But the main thing is, among Europeans, you seem to have more monogamy. You seem to have pairing. You seem to have an equal number of reproductive men and reproductive women. But among Africans, African humans, and among chimpanzees and bonobos, you don't have that. You tend to have a lot of polygamy. What do you think of that, Filbert?
It's interesting. I'll just leave it at that.
It's interesting. Okay. Well, we thought we'd start off with that. A few days ago, or I guess it was last week by the time this airs, on Election Day, as a matter of fact, I had, for the second half of my Election Day spectacular, part of an interview I had done a couple of years ago with Andrew Anglin. And if you go to my YouTube channel, you'll find a couple of years ago something. I don't remember exactly what the title was, but it was something about, I remember what the title of Andrew Anglin's article that prompted the video. And Andrew Anglin had written an article saying, when will the UN act to cull the Homo erectus population in order to save the African elephant?
And that was a good episode. That was one of my favorites. I listen to your show a lot, as you know, and I think that's probably my all-time favorite show.
That was a good one. So that's why I needed to fill up half of the show. The first half of the show was excess Richard Spencer interview, because we had had an interview that had gone on like 20 minutes longer than a show. So I had some left over that was specifically about the election, and I thought people needed to hear it. But it only filled up half of a show. And so I used, that interview with Andrew Anglin was certainly perhaps my favorite. And he's asking, he's satirical. You know, he's calling sub-Saharan Africans Homo erectus, which is, I guess, intended to be insulting, but whatever. The thing is, they've got their reproductions out of control. And it has massive implications for civilization. So what are we supposed to do about it? The UN projects the African population reaching 4.7 billion by the end of the century. It's currently about, 1.5 billion or something? And when I was born, it was, a few hundred million. So it's just exploding. And
it's that information is being suppressed, I think. People are purposely backpaging that information.
And, when you get to really, really big numbers, they don't mean much to most people. But the population of the world at the end of the century is projected only to be about 10 billion because Europeans and East Asians are no longer even reproducing enough to maintain their own populations. And then other areas, even like Latin America, where you used to think about Latin America population exploding, but not so much anymore.
Starting to slow down, too.
That's slowing down. The Middle East is high, but the Middle East is even projected to eventually slow down. India's slowed down.
Yeah, they're going to run out of water.
Yeah, South America has slowed down. Southeast Asia has slowed way down. It's pretty much Africa.
I don't see Africa slowing down until they're food subsidies and aid stops.
So, in Africa, you've always had high birth rates, but you also had high infant mortality rates and high death rates, low life expectancy. And if you've ever, there are a few books that are around. One book, which you can find on the internet, is called Negroes in Negro Land. Have you ever heard of that?
No. I'm not.
Well, it's an easy title to remember, and anybody can Google Negroes in Negro Land. And it was published in the mid-1800s, maybe the mid to late 1800s, sometime maybe 1870s, maybe a little later, but it was the 1800s. And it was based on reports from early European explorers, and remember, like the Congo Basin wasn't explored really until the 1860s and 1870s. But also, it contains accounts from Arab slave traders who had been at least in the eastern part of Africa for quite some time. And so, these are accounts of life in Africa before its contact or its influence from Western civilization. And it's really, really grim. And, if it was just one account, if it was just one person accounting, you could question it. But whether it was, Europeans, whether it was Arabs, it's very grim. The villages, there was just, violence and death and cannibalism. And wasn't very nice. There's another book was written. When was it? Oh, hold on one second. It's around here somewhere. But it was written. Here it is. Getting it out. And it's Thomas Parkenham, The Scramble for Africa, The White Man's Conquest of the Dark Continent from 1876 to 1912. And it's not as much about the daily lives of Africans, but you still get a fair amount of it. And the thing was, it was pretty grim in a lot of ways. Nobody would want to really live like that. There were, you know, some chiefs, and they had all the women they wanted, and there wasn't much material wealth. And you hear about sometimes,
probably wasn't much material either.
Right. Well, we was kings, right? Well, what were they?
We was flying around in spaceships until the white man came and took it away.
Well, what were they kangs of? What were the empires built on? You hear about sometimes these empires, the Songhe Empire in Mali, or the Zimbabwe Empire or something like that. You hear about
I built the pyramids. If I did my research correctly, right, they invented the comb.
Yeah, they
like the mop, I think. The traffic light.
Oh, right, the traffic light.
Open heart surgery.
The real McCoy.
I'd have to go on Google to find more. That's
anybody can do this now. You go on Google. This is something I had published on DavidDuke.com about a year ago, or early this year. It was in, I think, February. It's Black History Month. But you go, or maybe it was before Black History Month, but you go on Google and, okay, you search for African-American inventors, and you see a bunch of blacks. Well, go and search for American inventors. You see a bunch of blacks. You will see Thomas Edison, and you'll also see Alexander Graham Bell, but it's a very black-looking photograph of Alexander Graham Bell. But everybody, you don't see the Wright brothers. You see this Madam Maxwell something. I don't know. I can't remember her name. And what did she invent? Well, she had invented a cure for baldness.
Oh, the snake oil?
Yeah, cure for baldness. That's why you don't see bald men anymore, because she invented a cure 100 years ago. People used to go bald. So think about that next time you're flying around in an airplane. Why she is on the list of American inventors and the Wright brothers are not. Next time you're sitting behind a bald man on an airplane.
Yeah, and why does Martin Luther King still have a PhD?
Yeah, well,
well, that would be racist to, you know, take it away.
Yeah, because of the plagiarism, large parts were plagiarized.
And, yeah, copyright.
Yeah. No, but then you type in American mathematicians, American scientists, American physicists, and you see a bunch of black people. And, you know, but then you type in white American inventors, and you still see a bunch of black people. I don't know if they've done
articles on how white people stole all the inventions, right?
Yeah, but no, it was very, very grim, and they had a very high mortality rate. Well, here's the thing. So once whites penetrated Africa, I never got to this. So what were the empires built on when they was kings? The slave trade. Right? You know, I mean, a little bit of ivory, a little bit of gold, but primarily it was a slave trade. So, yeah. And, of course, you know, slavery was part of the ancient world, part of the not-so-ancient world.
Yeah, the tribes. They went to war. The tribes went to war, and then the winner, you know, took the spoils.
Yeah. And, you know, slave trade, they kept slaves themselves, but when they were in contact with the Arabs. The Arab slave trade from the Indian Ocean coast of Africa was massive. Now, we had about 400,000 African slaves came to what's now the United States. So the 40 million Africans, or 40 million blacks in America, are descended from about 400,000 slaves. And so that's a hundredfold increase. They've done very, very well in America, and their reproduction has been completely subsidized. They didn't start having that type of population increase in Africa until much, much later. They didn't have it until basically the 20th century, once the Europeans had penetrated Africa and brought, you know, sanitation and whatnot, public health. The African population was stable. The African-American population, the slave population, exploded. So whatever you think about the conditions of slavery, in terms of demographics, it was hugely beneficial for the black race in terms of demographics. You know, say what you want about other aspects of slavery, but in terms of demographic success.
Yeah, and if you look at, some people have pointed this out, I'm not the first one, but I mean, I'm sure you know this, if you point out, or compare rather, poor blacks in Africa to poor blacks in America, you know, who is it better?
Oh, absolutely.
And by how much of a margin, you know, that's the important part.
And, you know, there is a tiny number of blacks who have thought about that, right? That, you know...
You're right, there are. There's some that actually are grateful. And, yeah, it's important to recognize that.
Yeah. And, okay, so the... their great-great-great-grandparents or whatever, how many other greats you have to go back, who were picking cottons on plantations and had to work hard.
Jesse Lee Peterson.
Yeah, okay. So they had some of their ancestors whose names they don't know, unless maybe they've done this whole Ancestry.com thing,
right.
But who they never would have thought of and probably never really do think of, worked hard. And as a result of that hard, but not necessarily working any harder than any other peasants around the globe, you know, in an era where 90% plus of the population was peasants, right? They weren't necessarily working any harder than any other peasants, and weren't necessarily that much any more or any less free than peasants and serfs around the globe. Their conditions weren't necessarily any worse than the majority of peasants and agricultural workers around the world. But just based on that, and the white guilt trip, their descendants, of whom there are, you know, massive numbers, have their lives, their well-being completely subsidized by whites. That's huge. And of course, you know, like I say, around the world, you had agricultural workers. Most people around the world in those years, the 1600s to the 1800s, were when we had slavery in the United States. The bulk of the world was agricultural, like peasants, or they were serfs, and their lives weren't necessarily any better or any more free, any freer. And there are a few blacks who understand that and appreciate it, but in order to understand it and appreciate it, they have to think way outside the box that our educational system and our media puts their minds in. You were you went to public schools, Philbert?
I did, yes. I also went to Catholic schools, not the whole time, but
was there a difference? Like in the propaganda, for instance, in the anti-white propaganda, was there a difference between public schools and Catholic schools?
Yes, and what do you think it was, or what do you think it would be?
What do I think it would be? I would think that at the public schools there was a cult of personality built around Martin Luther King, and then, you know, the lesser gods of Rosa Parks and Jackie Robinson. And in Catholic school, they would probably be there, but to a lesser degree, and you'd still be more concerned with George Washington and Christopher Columbus. What do you think? Is that how it was?
Well, in my experience, no.
No?
It actually was the complete opposite, and I couldn't really tell you why, but in my experience, and I remember in Catholic school was very, very anti-white for me. In my local school, I think looking back at it, probably because we were majority white, you mm-hmm. know, and when public school, I did go to school in the inner city. It was in the 90s, and it wasn't as bad as it is now with the demographics. But it seemed to me like when I went to public school, and I'm talking fifth, sixth grade, I didn't see a public school until I think it was fifth grade. And everybody gets to hear my life story.
All right. Well, let's hear your life story on the other side of the break, okay? Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, Koshertified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anybody who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future. Welcome back to the show. We're going to hear about Philbert's, the story of his life.
Yeah. I was just saying, in short, Catholic schools were more anti-white than public schools were for me. It seems like public schools, they were more worried about the actual education, and because everybody was, you know, less educated, and it was harder to, you know, get through to a lot of the children. And and Catholic school kids were, you know, higher IQ in general, and we were all, you know, white and a couple Asians. And I think there was one black kid in the entire school. And we're talking several hundreds of kids.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Which school had more money at its disposal?
I don't think I know. That's a good question. Mm-hmm. Probably public school.
Yeah, I mean, public school. I've been to a number of schools.
Teachers got paid a lot more in public school. I overheard that one time.
The public school, I've been to public schools, inner city public schools, that seemed not to be lacking for money. The place, I've been to a public school in Appalachia that seemed pretty grimy. I've also been in a... you know, kind of Midwestern Rust Belt Catholic school that seemed pretty run down.
The first time I learned about Rosa Parks Catholic school, the first time I learned about Martin Luther King Catholic school, and first time I learned about Harriet Tubman Catholic school, go on and on. I remember fourth grade learning about Harriet Tubman, about how evil my people were for just trying to, you know, keep this black woman down that just wanted to learn how to read and go down the Underground Railroad and get her freedom. And, you know, I got to learn how evil my people were and, you know, how how I should. It was almost like a precursor to white privilege, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, and of course, the blacks, it's American Southerners weren't going over to Africa and kidnapping blacks and bringing them back here. The Africans were enslaving each other and keeping them or selling them off. And, you know, that's what their empires were based on. To the extent they had empires, that was what it was based on. And so they would sell slaves, not to white Southerners, but to transatlantic slave traders who were very, very often Jewish, perhaps very likely majority Jewish. It's interesting, if you go to the Wikipedia page for the biggest slave markets in the New World, or in America or in the New World, either way, and then you go to the Wikipedia pages for the oldest synagogues in the New World, guess what you find?
Probably a direct correlation.
Yes, they're the same places. So you know, there's all sorts of evidence that it was largely, if not primarily, a Jewish enterprise, and probably primarily. But even then, the much larger slave trade wasn't the Atlantic Ocean or the transatlantic slave trade. It was the Indian Ocean slave trade run by Arabs. So if there were, you know, 400,000 slaves brought to the American colonies in the United States, and 4 million brought to South America, and I think it was probably more than that, but in the Caribbean, it was like 40 million or more. It was like another order of magnitude that was brought to Arabia and India and, you know, that area.
By the Ottomans?
By the Arab slave traders, and that would have continued under the Ottoman period as well. Why don't you find big African populations in those countries? Although you do find...
Well, isn't it because they took precautions, I guess you could say.
They took precautions, yeah. So they castrated the men.
Right.
Yeah, and I guess they killed the babies that came from the females, or aborted them or whatever. You do see, like, there is
a little bit of Moorish blood running around in there, isn't it?
There is, so you'll see it. For instance, I think you know, with when that Khashoggi thing happened with that Saudi journalist, so-called journalist, being assassinated or terminated by a Saudi hit squad, you saw a leading Saudi general who was very, very Negro in appearance, and in some areas or sometimes you see people from the Arabian Peninsula who seem to pretty obviously have some African ancestry. There's a colony or a tiny little minority in an area of India that is of African extraction.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you about that. I was going to say I've seen many, many Indians that look, you know, twice as dark as, you know, the next.
So that is the Dravidian, like the Dravidian population. Well, Dravidian is actually a language family, but geneticists talk about the ancestral South Indians. And they are, you know, they separated from Africans 600,000 years ago. Not 600,000, 60,000 years ago, 80,000 years ago, something like that. And probably were among this early out of Africa. Oh, we're coming up on the break. We'll be right back. Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, Koshertified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anybody who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future. Welcome back to the show. We're having a good time talking about black people. I don't mean to be insulting, but no.
This is science.
This is science. And the South Indian population had been very dark-skinned. They were probably descended from an early out-of-Africa migration that went along the Indian Ocean coastal area, and there's a lot still in South India, but they went on to New Guinea and Australia, and that seems to be one out of Africa expansion, not necessarily the same one that produced the Europeans, Orientals, and American Indians, which seems to have been a separate event. We'll find out more about that as time goes on, but
no, out of India, that kind of, it's kind of got a ring to it, right?
Well, out of India, yeah.
I think there's somebody in Delhi that that could find some evidence for that.
Well, no, there is. Out of India, there's a, I've seen an Indian scholar who I think is wrong, but he's got this whole out of India theory. So that yeah, okay, humanity might have had its roots in Africa, but they came to India, and then from India they went everywhere else.
Have you heard of the out of Asia theory or concept?
Well, a long time ago, because Homo erectus had been found in Asia, Java man and Peking man.
Yeah, I always found those interesting.
Yeah, but those were populations that are typically not considered the same species as us, who had their origins in Africa too, but they left Africa hundreds of thousands of years ago, not tens of thousands of years ago, and they would have been encountered by more recent out of Africa waves. They would have been encountered by them, and there was at least a certain amount of mixing. And you find, especially among Australian Aborigines and New Guinea people, who are very dark-skinned, about 6% of their genome is from this mysterious archaic human population known as Denisovans, which were contemporary to Neanderthals and even interbred with them. And there's evidence that they had been in Asia, like in the Siberia area, 600,000 years ago. So there you go. I think so. But this African descended, this small African descended group in India is from a much more recent African slave trade. But in general, they didn't do well over there. And where have they done best? The black people have done best when they are a minority among whites, when they're being ruled by whites. And I'm just saying that objectively, not that I want to rule them. I don't want to rule them. And of course,
I kind of disagree half-heartedly with you.
Okay, please.
I think that the African Americans or the Negroes, I think actually they do better when they're in a white country with the Jews in control.
Well, here's the thing.
At least in the short term, maybe not. Well, nobody does good in the long run, I guess.
They get more Gibbs, maybe. But what's happened to the family? What's happened to what's happened really to their lives?
I know. I guess I would make the argument that that's more of a white thing. I mean, you could argue that's whiteness is more destroyed than their family, you know.
Okay, I'm trying to get at what you're saying, and so for instance,
the family has traditionally been
a Western thing.
Not from Africa.
So you're making the point, and it's a valid point, that I'm imposing my own value system when I'm evaluating how are they doing well. So I look back 50, 60 years ago and I say their family was intact and they had fathers, and now they don't have fathers, and instead they have Barack Obama and Nicki Minaj, whereas in the old days they had fathers and families and more stable lives, less likely to be in prison, less likely to be committing crimes, although they were committing crimes,
yeah,
but less likely.
And that's a good point. They would be better off anyhow, you know, even without the Jews, but all the civil rights organization and affirmative action and Black Lives Matter and on.
Okay,
but
so
it's hard to say. It's hard to say how things would have turned out without them. You know, it's probably would have been better, though. I agree.
Well, okay. I mean, from our value system. So, but you're actually raising, I think, a very valid point. So, from the way we, according to our own priorities, the way we would like to have our lives, we would like to have our lives with a mother and a father, and then when we get older, with a wife and a family, and that's the way we look at a successful life and a job and things like that. And the Black population 50 years ago was more likely to be like that. But is that really fulfilling what is in their nature, or is what the Jewish society, the Jewish-led society of the past five decades, what they have transformed the typical life, Black life, to be, where...
And our lives, too.
And our lives, too, yeah. So now the vast majority, at least three-fourths of Black babies are born out of wedlock. To the extent Blacks have brothers and sisters, they're liable to be half brothers and half sisters rather than full brothers and sisters. They're likely to have different fathers, very, very common, much more common than it would have been before. They're likely to they go to school with whites, but they don't do very well. Some of them wind up going to colleges without really deserving it and getting jobs that they don't really have to work and produce at. But then others wind up going in and out of prison. Is the new Black life, is that more satisfying for them, based on their own values? I mean, based on my values, the old way would have been more satisfying.
Yeah, it would have been more. I hate to look at too scientifically, but it would have been more. Prone to their genetics, you know. I mean, life, you know, should reflect who you are, and you know, you want to find out who you are, you take one of those 23andMe tests, right, and find out what your DNA says.
So Jesse Lee Peterson, whom we were talking about last week, Jesse Lee Peterson would be a Black man who would say that, the old fashioned 50, 60 years ago when they had families, that was better. And now
I do agree, he's right.
Yeah.
I tend to think that, say, for instance, if we didn't have a media system that was, under occupation from another nation and people, then I think it probably would be similar to things how they were in the 50s and 60s. Maybe we would be, or Blacks would be more like whites in a sense. They'd probably live similar lifestyles and just talk differently and, form their own little communities. And I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, I mean, over the years, I've known lots and lots of Blacks. And I do know plenty of Blacks who there's the mother and the father. Nuclear family, and they did reasonably well. They're still subsidized in a lot of ways because they get preferential, preferences in hiring and whatnot. So perhaps, somebody who worked for the post office and then they retired from the post office. But they seem to be happy. But then you know, there's lots and lots of blacks who just die early, who don't do well. I don't know. Well, okay. Let's put aside, you know, how they value their lives or how we value their lives. Let's get back to Andrew Anglin's point that regardless, there's just this massive population explosion. And you know something? Here's something else. And I'd like to check on it, but I think it's the case. I think it's the case that black men in prison tend to have, you know, over the course of their lives, black men who have been in prison have more children than black men who went to college, for instance.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I didn't know that, but
I think that's the case. I don't have any study to point to, but I'm pretty sure that's the case. You know, black women on welfare have more babies than black women who are married. I think that's the case as well.
Yeah, yeah. Like you said, we subsidize single mother families.
And yeah, and so it's really dysgenic, even if you're looking within just within the black population, it's dysgenic. But getting back to Andrew Anglin's point, well, what do we do about this? You know, he proposed maybe killer robots, but he was worried that the killer robots might, you know, artificial intelligence, like at Google. Google sometimes misidentifies gorillas as black people and vice versa. and he's worried about what's going to happen.
That was a fantastic joke. I hope he was just joking.
About Google?
Yeah, but I mean, no, about sending killer
robots. Oh, killer robots, yeah. I mean, that's just Andrew Anglin being Andrew Anglin and other things. My proposal is actually that the Chinese should, as much as possible, these countries should be put under the tutelage of the Chinese.
Yes, sir. We've talked about that, and that's happening, too.
Well, I mean, the Chinese are getting more and more economic penetration into Africa. If you look at the wake of World War I, the League of Nations established mandates in some of the former colonial territories of the Ottoman Empire and the German Empire. So, you know, the Middle East was divided up. I guess actually the German Empire, their colonies were just transferred. Maybe they were considered mandates. And then after World War II, you had the trust territories. And so some of the Japanese territories in the Pacific Ocean were turned into trust territories. And so to establish trust territories for China, so China would actually be governing Africa. To me, that's the best situation because white people can't do it. White people have been too, that means Americans, that means Europeans, been just, well, we did a horrible job at it. We've done a horrible job at it. There was no African overpopulation until you had, you know, Christian missionaries and whatnot going into Africa. And then we've been too brainwashed with you know, Jewish created guilt. So the Chinese are free of all that. And then Chinese also have their own history of having imposed a, you know, demographic restrictions on themselves. The one-child policy, and the Africans don't have the governing capacity to impose it on themselves. But the Chinese have both the moral standing, because they imposed it on China for a generation and a half, and they have the administrative capabilities, one would think. I mean, it might be harder to impose it on the Africans than to impose it on the Chinese. But to me, that's the... You know, and the Chinese, they want natural resources. I think that's a fair trade. Let the Chinese exploit the natural resources of Africa and have them govern it for the benefit of all of humanity.
Yeah, I don't think that, I could be wrong, but I don't think, really don't think the Chinese are out to take over the world, you know, with their, if you want to call it, quote, colonization of Africa.
No, I don't think so.
I don't think they're really colonization, but for lack of a better term, I'll just call it that, I suppose.
I mean, the Chinese are already the biggest ethnic group on Earth.
And they, yeah, they are ethnic group, and they have a, I mean, they may not be the nicest people in the world, but I tell you what, they're a lot smarter than your average African, and they're better at numbers. So if you look, I think the world, just my opinion, I think the world would be a better place.
Yeah.
If somebody else was in charge of, you know, that continent.
Yeah.
Well, really, they're not even in charge of it. I don't know.
They're not in charge of it yet, but I, you know, you do hear, and partly, you know, there are Jews who are calling for a Cold War with Africa. I think, I mean, with China. I think of Noah Feldman, formerly of Harvard Law School. I think he's at Columbia now. But he wrote a book called The Cool War, and it was against China. And Tucker Carlson, he goes on these anti-China tirades, too. I don't think that's very useful. I think we need a relationship with China, and they've never been really that, well, I shouldn't say never. They expanded, the Han people expanded to the south, and so what's now China, you know, the southern part of it wasn't that Chinese 2,000 years ago, but it is now. But at any rate, in modern times, they really haven't been particularly aggressive overseas, partly because maybe they didn't have the capacity. They were on the receiving end more than they were on the giving end. And, yeah, that's my position. Let them have China. I let them have Africa, and because nobody else really seems to be capable of taking care of it. And what do we, what's the alternative? The alternative is to have massive African overpopulation, and the expectation from, you know, the Jewish-led establishment is, okay, well, when they crowd up Africa too much, and they, all the animals there are extinct, and they can't feed themselves anymore, then just let them have Europe. We'll be back after the break.
Thank you.
welcome back to the show. Well, we've spent most of the show talking about black people in Africa. And for any black people out there, I'm not trying to be insulting. In the end, we're interested in what's best for all of humanity.
Yeah, but black people are welcome to theorize about, you know, white people and white civilization too.
And that's so, my question. What about
two-way street,
Philbert? What about white people?
What about whites?
What about white people? What about Alaska?
Yeah, I think we could make that our ethno state.
Well, I'm not interested in. I'm actually not interested. Did in creating a white ethno state in so to speak in North America. Some people talk about that, but
probably not possible anyway.
Was there something specific about Alaska? Why? I mean, I don't think there's many black people up there anyway. There are Indians and Eskimos, Aleuts and whatnot.
Well, I've been thinking about taking a trip up there. I've never been. And Canada, too, for that matter. And I was just, you have a lot of time to sit around and think. I hear people talk about creating an ethno state, and I just couldn't help but kick around a little thought experiment about Alaska being the ethno state and perhaps maybe another nation state getting involved to help us. Because, I mean, you can take hypotheticals all day long or all night long, and I don't see that happening in any kind of realistic scenario without the help of a nation state, particularly probably a one with a strong military. I don't know.
Well, the point,
and I'm not advocating for the violent overthrow of the U.S. government, because that would, of course, be illegal.
Mm-hmm. Well, the point I was making earlier this week, and maybe I'll make on another show, is that I don't see a small breakaway white ethno state as being viable, because it would be. Could be annihilated by the nuclear-armed rump America still under Zionist control. But what I look at is kind of a Brezhnevian Soviet model in terms of the ethno-state. The Soviet Union under Brezhnev, which was post-Jewish, elevated the Russian people to the big brothers among the various Soviet peoples. And it was a respected position. The Georgian people and the Azerbaijani people, they had their own rights to, their own culture. But there was no Russian guilt. The Russians weren't considered to be bad people for having created an empire. They were the big brothers of all the Soviet peoples. And a situation in which whites retake leadership of the United States, I don't think it would be so bad as long as if the non-white people in the United States, instead of being taught about Martin Luther King and whatnot, they were taught to respect our history and what white people created here. Not that I want a white minority. I think if we took control of our country, we could, we could expel illegal aliens and whatnot. We
took control of our finances as well.
Yeah. Well, we'll probably have to talk about that in another show, because there's not enough time in this show. But I want to thank you for coming on again.
Yeah, great to be here.
And we'll continue this discussion on another exciting episode of National Beauty.